there. Welcome back to another episode of the Support Ops Hangout. I'm your host, Chase Clements. This is a show that helps you deliver a better support experience to your customers. Before we jump into this week's topics, let's go ahead and meet the rest of the crew. Now, we might look a little different this week, we should point out too. We're using Zoom.us now just to check it out, try it out for a little bit instead of Google Hangouts. So that's the difference in the video here. But other than that, the crew is still fantastic and awesome and back, which is probably the best part. So first up, Chase Livingston from Automatic. How are you?
Doing very well. Glad to be here.
And then next up, Carolyn from Buffer. Carolyn, I was going to say your last name, and I listened to the Buffer podcast and heard you pronounce it 2.5 years now. I still can't pronounce it.
It's okay. I'm Carolyn Koprasch, and I have a question for you all. Are you using speaker view or gallery view?
Oh, I use the speaker because it's the that's my view is the one that it records off of, which I found out last week. Did not know. So instead of just like having a couple of talking heads like last week, you know, at least this one like sorts through or whatnot.
Cool.
And last but not least, Jeff, who the I forgot. It's been 2 weeks and I forgot. I even made myself a to-do and forgot. The awesome, magnificent, great video guy, Jeff, who was the best at everything.
Checks in the mail, Chase.
Thank you. I try.
I am just rocking gallery view right now, and I love it.
I'm looking for gallery view as well.
So, yeah, Jeff, how are you?
I'm great, thanks.
Okay, after all that, and you're like, yeah, I'm good. I'm great.
Okay. I'm ready to rock. Let's do this.
Cool. All right. So this week, a question from one of our listeners, Andy Small. And it was a really great one, too. He sent us a tweet and was asking how we convince the development team, to actually listen to support. And that's one of those things where, you know, we've been doing this show, like I said, for 2.5 years now. And there's still one of the things I still keep hearing over and over is just not only like how to make your support team better, but to actually how to get other people to listen to your support team. Lots of companies out there just see customer support as another expense, a cost center, or one more thing that they've got to figure out how to minimize the cost on. And, you know, we all know, and your listeners know that you're more than that. So this is the week that we're looking at growing your team's influence and convincing other teams, convincing the rest of your development team to actually start listening to what you've got to say. So Jeff, let's you take the first swing at this. You know, your role came out of, the support team into your new role. So do you think that that's part of it? Should teams be looking at not graduating per se, but like basically sending support team members out into other roles as they start, gaining more experience and things like that? Is that a good way to kind of like spread your web of influence?
I think so. I think that's one good avenue. But even more basic than that, I think that the company itself should be putting people who put the customer first in positions of making decisions about the customer's experience, which is like whatever, 75% of the roles in any given company. I think that if you don't have that, right, and perhaps the person who originally asked this question doesn't have that, I don't know how to turn it around, right? Like how is as a new employee or someone coming in sort of a, like one of the lower level positions and maybe not like a position of leadership or a VP position or whatever, can start to say, hey, we need to change the culture. I think we could probably do a whole show on like the small things that you can do, right? The things you can do to sort of start that snowball forming. But I think it's incredibly important that the company put people in those customer-facing positions, that they put the people who care about the customer there. So maybe that's graduating from support. Maybe that's graduating from like customer success, something related to support. Marketing seems like a really good position for that as well, because you're thinking deeply about your customer set. There's a lot of different positions you could do that from, but I think the company culture part comes first.
Yeah, Carolyn, what do you think? I see you shaking your head there.
Yeah.
Okay, good.
Ramble and agreement, but I'm not going to.
See, again, short, simple answers. Just like, yeah, whatever. Yeah, so, what you said. That was great.
I've spent some time listening to myself on podcasts recently, and I am trying to work on that.
Yeah, so.
No way. You just got to be you, Carolyn. We want you for you, Carolyn. Just be yourself.
I promise I will.
All right, good.
So, Carolyn, with Buffer, you know, we talked about those the liaison roles that y'all have, which is a good way of making sure that the customer's voice and that the support team's influence is making its way throughout the company. So we won't rehash that one, but is that the only
We've
thing?
We've changed it.
Oh my God, you've already changed. All right, so what did you change to? That's a good one.
Okay, it's what actually very similar.
And why did you come, why the change?
Yeah, so it's really similar. It's not that different. It's just instead of there being multiple product liaisons for the different teams, now there's one product signals person on what's a newly coined quality squad, which has like special like bugs focused person, kind of like an escalated tier two, tier three type person, and this sort of product-minded person who also investigates signals and looks into things that aren't bugs but seem like they need to be addressed, confusions, things like that, or wishes.
So why go from the multiple people that you had doing that, and why put it all with one person? Because I devil's advocate, that's, I'm sure that y'all thought it out and everything else, but for our listeners and me playing devil's advocate here, is that one person now kind of going to be like a funnel that everything has to go through? Like, pros and cons on that, but you know, con here, one person has to keep all this up in the air. And then if something happens to that person or they're out or whatnot, like you lose your person.
Yeah, true. Couple reasons. One is that it's a dedicated role as opposed to the product liaison, which was a support role. So, that person now is, sort of empowered to do that all the time, not just like when possible. And secondly, we mostly did it because the product team completely rearranged as opposed to, we mostly map to the product team because, then there's the smallest teams that map to each other, and they knows which group of heroes to talk to, and the heroes know which group of engineers to talk to if there's something going crazy or they have questions. So we often rearrange one day after the product team, and this was one of those cases where they kind of shook up everything and moved from plan-based groups within the product team to a much bigger like tribe model with more like areas of the product teams, which are no longer based on what plan, which makes more sense because like an individual plan user uses the same, almost exactly the same compose box as the awesome plan user. So like if there's a compose box bug, who do you talk to? So this makes more sense for them and for us, so we were happy to adjust.
I think we also should do a podcast, like totally unrelated, but I mean Buffer started their podcast, you need another one now, not only about culture, just call it change and just be like, look, this is what we're doing this week.
Yeah, it's a good idea.
So Chase Livingston, when it comes to Automattic, you know, that's a culture that's always been pretty famous for making sure that the customer's voice is heard and all that. But how is your team with Jetpack, you know, specifically, how is your support team there making sure that you're not just holed off in a wall somewhere, that, you know, what you've, the suggestions and the influence and things that you have to offer, how are y'all making sure that that gets out to the rest of the Jetpack? I was going to say company, but you know, that Jetpack bigger team.
Yeah, that's a good question. First off, I will make it known I am using Gallery View. I thought I was using Speaker View just because that's what it said in the right hand corner, but apparently that means you switch to Speaker View. So,
wow.
To throw that out.
Oh, no.
Oh, everybody else is back.
Anyway. Yeah, I think we were all.
Oh, everything I thought I knew was ruined.
Damn it, living
just like that. The start video buttons down there are confusing too, so I don't know. But anyway, so I think one of the things we found is that we make a lot of noise to our developers, and you know, maybe if something isn't seen as important, or maybe they don't seem to be picking up on a problem we're having or a suggestion that somebody's made, we can, you know, keep pestering them is a big thing, unfortunately, that sometimes we have to do. For the most part, we don't have any problems with that. But occasionally, like if there's, you know, another big thing going on, or they're just super busy, you know, we might have to make some noise and sort of let them know that what we're saying is important too, or that we feel that it's important based on what we're seeing in support. And it, you know, it automatic, even though, you know, we're a pretty large company, it's just still something that we, you know, sometimes struggle with and that we're always working on trying to make sure, you know, as we add new happiness engineers and you know, sort of build out new happiness teams and structures and that kind of thing to support the growing number of users we have and that kind of thing, making sure that we have the best ways to communicate the problems we're seeing or whatever with the you know, even the growing number of development teams, you know, the development's growing just as fast as support is at automatic. So, you know, there's constantly new teams being formed to work on, you know, new projects that we're doing and that kind of thing. So it's sort of a massive problem that we do the best we can to solve.
So how do you politely make noise? Because I would imagine, like, we joked and said pestering earlier, but, I mean, there is a fine line there that moves beyond, like, badgering, pestering versus, you know, a polite, like, hey, we're still seeing this. Like, can we get this fixed? Like, how do you walk that line?
Yeah, for sure. Sometimes it may come off as badgering or annoying, I'm afraid, but most of the time I think, you know, there'll be like a P2 thread, which is what we use to communicate internally, similar to like a Basecamp thread or whatever. And so we'll just, you know, if it's been a week or two since we've heard anything back, we'll, you know, maybe ping the person that probably should be responsible or whatever, and, you know, in that thread, and, you know, mention their username directly or whatever, so they'll get a notification in Slack and that kind of thing. To maybe, you know, go take another look at it, like, hey, you know, Joe, have you taken a look at this yet? Or could you maybe take a look at this whenever you get a chance, something like that. Sometimes it's, you know, maybe just finding another developer that may have a little more bandwidth, depending on what's going on. And then sometimes we, you know, just have to be patient, honestly, because maybe there really is something more important that they're working on at the moment that takes precedence over the issue that we're seeing. So just having that communication, you know, as best we can with the developers, either through talking to them directly or filtering, you know, some of those concerns through Ryan, our team lead, so he can talk to, you know, the lead of the development team for Jetpack to, you know, see what we can work out. Usually we don't have any problems. If, you know, maybe just pinging somebody once, if they haven't looked at it, is usually plenty. And they're like, oh, sorry, you know, I missed this in the 57 other notifications I got from, you know, email or Slack or something today. I'll, you know, get to it as soon as I can. That's, you know, generally it's not a problem if they don't want to work on something or they don't care what we say. It's more just they missed it in the mass amount of other, you know, pings and things that they get every day. So it's just, you know, trying to find the right balance, I think, between pestering somebody and just making sure that they see what you hope they can see and work on what you would like them or think that they need to be working on to make the, you know, product the best we can for our users.
Can I offer two things?
Well, let me throw mine in real quick. I was just going to say that if you use an emoji in there when you pester them, it's a lot better. You know, who gets mad at emojis, you know? So, but on to the more
serious. Smiley face always helps.
Yeah, so Jeff, you're more serious two things there.
So two things, one from, I guess, like each side of this, and one of them is more like just from my recent experience. I don't think it's actually something we should get super deep on this podcast with something to take away. So from the support side, I think one thing that's really important, and I wish that Aaron, who is running our support team, was on the show, because I think he would talk about it better than I do. But when you talk about like the utility rate of your support team, right, how busy they are, I think 100% or like top should be considered much lower than where most support teams put it. Most people think that if your support team isn't like, I don't know, like way over like 140% utilization, then they're not busy enough and they need more, you know, work or you don't need to hire somebody or something like that. I think that lack of breathing room leads to the pestering as opposed to the like being valuable, you know, customer liaisons and helpful in documenting issues and tracking down how to reproduce them and that kind of thing. So I just want to make sure that that's known, because one of the best ways that I think as a company leader, if you wanted to make your support team more impactful, it's make sure you're giving them the space to be impactful and that you're not just trying to plan out all of their time and like assign them tasks. That's something that we've certainly fallen into of like, huh, that support person seems to be getting cereal and not doing something. Maybe we should like assign them to something. But that free time, if they really, really care about the customer experience, that free time will go to really, really great use. The thing I was going to say from the other side, and I don't think it's worth getting into that deeply, but something for support leaders who are listening to this show to think about is we've tried really hard to reduce the direct communication between people around specific issues. So meaning like as a support person, if I notice a bug, I don't go directly to a specific engineer who like worked on that before and say like, hey, there's a problem with this. Like, do you think you can help me? And the reason it's a really tough balance to hit, but the reason for that is that people will then be on the hook to support what they built forever instead of the knowledge being spread throughout the team. And that's a very active decision that you need to, that teams need to make. If somebody built a service a year ago and they have to continue supporting only that service, it really hampers how the rest of the team can handle problems if that person's out on vacation, that person leaves the company, that person needs to build a new big service that then has to be supported. That's something that we think about a lot, is like reducing the psychological burden of engineers who see like there's a problem, but they're currently wrapped up in another project. So just something for a future show fodder, maybe.
I would also like to add something. Is my sound crazy, by the way? No. Okay. Okay. So I had an experience recently where we kind of went like, y'all, everything is so broken. Like, it's so bad. Like, can we just like stop the production line for a second? And our experience wasn't that everybody went, oh, fine. They all went, really? And we realized that like the level of, unless you have a really intentional and organized process for measuring and analyzing and reporting on the quality of a product, then like for the most part, how, like what face the support team is making in a meeting is like the measure of quality. Like, and I would actually love to have maybe a whole separate conversation about this, because we realized that we were the measure of the product quality. And I don't think we ever fully internalized that. And so we had been trying to protect them and not pester them and like, oh, I'm sure they're working on really important stuff. And like, they know, they can see, it's just like, I mean, they're in the product and they hear from customers. Like, I'm sure they know this is probably working on something more important. They're probably not. They probably just don't know. So like the level that you think you're pestering, if you are generally like a kind and thoughtful person on a support team that's generally like trying to do right by the, like, I would really say wherever you think your bar is for pestering, like double it. It's probably way too low. Like, you probably want to be in communication way more than you are now. Like, it probably doesn't hit pestering status until much later, because in my experience, they don't know unless you tell them.
Yeah, and that's especially true. So, you know, smaller teams, everybody probably knows what everybody else is doing on a day-to-day basis. As your team grows, I mean, Basecamp is 49, 50 people now. I can't keep up with all of it. And I know other people can't keep up with everything we're seeing in support. So that's one of the reasons why you have to over-communicate and be very explicit. This is exactly what we're seeing. A lot of times with us, it'll be, so we're seeing a certain bug or whatnot, right? And we want to make sure that it gets out to the rest of the team so we don't forget about it. We'll post a message in one of our base camps, and then every time that we come across that again from a customer report, we'll make sure that goes on that same thread. And that kind of, for me at the beginning, like Carolyn said, it felt like it was a little pestering because you're literally leaving like a, and here's another case comment, and here's another link comment. It, for me at the beginning, kind of felt like those kind of annoying like plus one on feature request threads that we always see from customers, which can kind of, you know, but I think the more that you do it, you're right, Carolyn, it's that level is way higher than I thought it was. And I still don't think I've actually hit that level yet. And I've pestered on some threads. But yeah, I think you're onto something there. Don't be afraid. Like, just because you think you might be an annoyance to somebody is not a reason why your customer has to take a backseat on something. That's your job. Your job is to relay what you're seeing from your customers. I mean, you're paid for that influence, like we were talking about earlier. That's what you're there for. So don't try to like put yourself in a box or diminish your voice and the customer's voice just because you're afraid that you might be annoying somebody.
Yeah, and I
think we have to separate though, and maybe Carolyn, you can do this. Like, pestering is. Or wait, from my perspective, pestering is not a first time thing. Pestering is like a reminding somebody about a previous issue that you already alerted them to. So bringing up issues that are happening versus reminding people about issues that you already told them about and you got like the read receipt that they're like, yep, I saw this, got it. Like those two things I think need to be separated, because one is, I'm seeing issues on a daily basis and I want to raise them on behalf of the customer. The other one is, hey, like just a reminder, you know, weekly reminder that like this really needs work. And I think that those two things need to be considered separately.
Okay. I have a couple of thoughts. So the difference between we're seeing this every day, this is a bug that's coming up, that's a continual, that's the way I've been using the word pestering. This, just a reminder that this needs work. I can't imagine a situation where that would be even the case if like it's not coming up over and over, unless like, I don't know what this world is over on this side. So what can you,
like a bug? Do you have like a bug tracker? Like
an issue tracker? That was the other thing I was going to say, is I think that if you're feeling pestered or you're feeling like you're pestering, then that's a process question. Then it's, why do you have to ping someone on Slack? Like, why is it like, if you're feeling like you have to get over this emotional and social hurdle to like annoy someone on Slack in order to get a bug looked at, then that's not a problem with that engineer or you. That's a problem with the process. Like, they're then clearly, if you've outgrown the ability to just ping your engineer in Slack, then that's the problem. If you feel like you're pestering, then you need to use GitHub or whatever, or whatever people use to track bugs, which I'd be curious to hear what everybody uses. What do you use to track bugs?
We use GitHub.
We use Basecamp, of course.
We use GitHub for Jetpack, but some of the other stuff we use Track, TRAC, which is like a Subversion SVN thing that's WordPress specific, I guess, or the way we work specifically.
Cool. Yeah. Anytime I would say lean into one of those tools if you feel like you're having to pester. Whether it's this needs work and I'm reminding you, which is a little confusing to me, or this is still coming up every day and like you need to know every time it's coming up because you need to be able to properly prioritize it.
Both of those sound like the same thing to me. Like the one world is, I just heard about this for the first time. I want to log this somewhere. I don't know whether it's happening a lot, but it seems like a problem. I want to log it. The other one is, yep, just answered my third ticket today, and all three times I let you know personally, perhaps over Slack, that I got another one, right? You see a lot of those types of even like GitHub comments around like, yep, and another one. And it's like, what you're creating, call it whatever you want. Maybe it's pestering, maybe it's not, but what you're creating is psychological burden for the person who's like, yes, I would love to do that right now. I need to finish this, then I would love to prioritize that problem for you.
No.
The three notifications per day is like kind of crazy.
No, I couldn't agree less. If you have three cases today, that person should drop what they're doing. And they should know. And they should have the right to make that decision for themselves. And the product team should be able to say, oh, this came up three times. Then let's talk about that and decide whether we want to drop this thing.
Wait, but let's talk about it and decide. Carolyn, let's talk about it and decide is different than I'm just going to drop whatever I'm doing and start doing that. Let's talk about it and decide is a process. I'm just going to make this decision is not a process.
No, but you can't even, you don't even give them the right to make that. Let's make that. Let's talk about this and decide. If you don't tell them all three times.
I don't think that that's true.
I think for me personally, that when you have, it's all about how you look at it, right? So another comment of plus one, I'm seeing this still, whatnot. For me, it comes in helpful for a couple of reasons. The first being, one, it gives me a nice clean thread with all the customers that we've talked to about it, so I can let them know when it's fixed. Two, it gives the designer, developer, whoever's going to be fixing this bug or working on this feature or whatnot, it gives them cases to look through to find out exactly what's going on and be able to see it from multiple different perspectives from different customers and things, which is really handy. I think it steps the line over into pestering when it starts to feel like your dentist telling you to floss, you know, when it's, or you're like your phone beeping and reminding you, hey, it's been 10 minutes. Make sure you stand up and walk around the room for a minute. I think there's a way to be nice about it. I think there's a way that you can keep, you know, whoever is, whatever team is looking at the specific thing. I think you can keep them in the loop and let them know that this is an issue. I think when it becomes pestering is it's strictly, and here's another one, and here's another one, and here's another one. Like, yeah, here's another one, but tell me why this one is important. Like, why are we adding it to this comment? Like, what's different for this one versus what we've seen already? So I don't know. That's kind of how I look at it anyway.
It's hard to talk about in the abstract because I think actually if you set three in an hour and it's like part of the core flow, you should not be putting it in the bug tracker. You should be going into Slack in like a team broader channel and say like, hey, I think we have some like major alert problem that we need to resolve here.
Right.
If I think it's like, hey, I'm like digging up this bug from 6 months ago because I just found my second case of it, but why haven't you fixed it by now? yeah, that's just something where the benefit of distance is, and making an intentional decision about what to work on can be a really big. It's just somewhat counterintuitive, but it's like a really important step, I think, in the process.
Otherwise, you
will find yourself kind of tracking that stuff down, and that's all you do.
Making a note, I'm just going to put a whole episode aside for this. Sure. Because, yeah, there's plenty to talk about. But one of the other things I did want to talk about before we wrap the show up, because I think it's important to bring it back to the original question, how do you get your influence back out there, right? How do you do it in a friendly way that's not pestering, that is growing your customer's voice and your support team's voice in the product? One of the things that I think is really helpful is doing all-hand support or everyone on support or whatever you want to call it, right? So I'd be curious to hear about y'all's perspective. Chase Lucas, we can start with you on this one. Like how every new hire goes through support first, which seems like a really good breeding ground. That's the wrong phrase to use. but a really good way to kind of get them ingrained with the support feeling right out of the gate.
Yeah, I think that's definitely, you know, a big part of the idea is making sure that even if they're going on to become a PHP developer or a designer or whatever the case may be, that they, you know, think about support at the top of their mind, because that's what they started out doing at the company, you know, on their first day was, you know, support. So they always keep that in the back of their minds when, you know, dealing with support, and also when doing their normal job, whether it's designing a new interaction or coding a new screen or flow or whatever the case may be. So yeah, I think that's definitely one of the big reasons that everybody does that. And then everybody rotates through support once a year, regardless. So you start out on support, and then once a year, everybody on a sort of a rolling basis, each team rotates through support. So you sort of constantly get that reminder and see, you know, what's changed in the last year from the last time you did support.
Yeah, and for those companies that are worried about that scaling up too, I mean, automatics is massive, but I mean, Amazon does that. Everybody in Amazon spends time working the customer calls and emails and things like that. So it doesn't matter how big you are. Like, it is feasible, as long as we've been talking about processes, you know, as long as you have the processes in place, you can bring your entire company through your support just to give them that experience. Carolyn, I know y'all do the Buffer Bootcamp. Is that anything like that in it, or is that after they get hired?
Sometimes it can include some support. It's a little bit more case by case. We do end up doing some all hands support on retreats, so that's kind of when we do those rotations. I did want to add, I asked Andy a little bit more about this question, and I feel like we focused a lot on bugs in this, and he was actually talking about feature requests, which I think is a totally different conversation. So we might need to do part two next week on this question. So I just saw his reply tweet. So,
all right. Well, I got that one. So yeah, Andy, make sure to listen to part two on this one. I'll own that one. That was the host just chasing a rabbit trail.
No, I think there are two different conversations, and they're both really valuable.
And besides, challenge cake was thrown. So
multiple challenge cakes from Carolyn on this episode. Wasn't the original question even a higher level than like tactical issues around bugs? Or I don't actually know specifically now. It sounds like feature requests, but it didn't sound very tactical, the original question. It was more like, how does support get that strong voice at the table and make sure that they have that, which is like a very well treaded topic on this show, but still something that is like really challenging, especially if you're at a company that doesn't just pull the chair out and say like, sit down. I think that there's like a conversation that we missed there as well.
Yeah. And this is one of those where, so a lot of this episode too has been set up for talking about I just saw Andy's tweet too. So talking about that second part, you know, how to present the case to the dev team when the support team knows what customers want. So we'll make sure to tackle that one on next week's episode. Jeff, I think you're right. I think that we kind of keep treading over the, pull out a chair and have a seat kind of conversation, because it's still a problem. Because it's still, you know, I see emails every week where people, what's a good way to phrase it? Like, all right, so Buffer and Automatic and Wistia and Basecamp and all, we kind of live in a really nice support, not utopia necessarily, that's Bufferland utopia, but definitely a nice little niche where how do you want to phrase it? It's not that we've got it better than a bunch of other companies, but that we handle
support
differently. Okay, so we got it better than a bunch of other companies. And so we've got listeners that listen to the show, and they're like, oh, that's great. I see how it works for Buffer, but how can I make that happen when we don't have that kind of setup? So that influence, you know, I think that was a really good thing that we want to touch on, because if you don't have it already, if you don't kind of walk into that at the beginning, then you have to fight for that. You have to fight to make sure that whenever you do have something, a bug or a feature or whatever, right? So when you have something like that, you have to, and your company's not listening to you about it, you've got to fight to get them to listen, but you've got to do it in a way that's not pestering, that's not angry or anything like that. So evidently, like we've mentioned, I think we missed a little bit on Andy's question for this one, but we're going to fix that in the next episode.
Well, I would say, like, to Jeff's
point, it's a good setup.
To Jeff's point, from the very beginning, like, if you don't have the ear and if you view support as a cost center, then you've got a fundamental challenge then that's, if that's the fundamental challenge that you're asking, then like you can't redesign the entire company culture. If you can, it's slow and painful. So I would say this answer still works. Like, okay, whether you have the product and executive team's ear or not, you still kind of have to start with like, okay, what do I do today? And that still is data and measuring and tracking and like having, like building that case is still, it's whether they're already listening and you're just figuring out how to present the information, or if you're figuring out how to present the information so that they'll listen. I feel like that's like very similar path of like how I behave today and what processes I put in place today.
I think that that's right. I don't think we talked a lot about how a support leader, so let's say that you're a support leader at a large company or mid-sized company, whatever. And by large, I mean like automatic is extra large, like super big. You walk in, you're already given the seat at the table. How do you make the most of that? Like, what is a support leader who isn't doing support? Like, they're not writing any emails to customers. What do you do to make sure that the rest of the company is like, yes, support is like a super valued avenue for input from us. They are a great barometer of, you know, overall customer happiness and satisfaction. Like, what do you do? What do you just make sure people are answering tickets? Like, what do you do? And I don't necessarily have the answer to that question. Maybe that would be one where you just fire me for an episode and you bring in like Andrew Spittle or something, someone who's like way smarter about that than I am. But I think it's a really interesting question.
Agreed.
See, if nothing else, this episode has given us a lot of good follow-up episodes that's coming after this one.
Yeah.
All right. But yeah, I mean, tactical stuff like we talk about, and we'll wrap up with this. So like we mentioned, you know, you got to have, again, processes in place to kind of get your influence out there, regardless of how big you are, how much influence you've got or whatnot. You've got to have processes in place to make the most of some of this. And, you know, you've got to be able to communicate and over-communicate, but do it in a way that isn't pestering or nagging or anything like that. And then the last thing we talked about, you know, with that everyone on support or having, you know, your new hires roll through support. I think that's a good way. That's something that you can pitch to your executive team or whatnot and not disguise it, but be like, hey, I think our designer is going to get a little bit better base if they come through support first. Can we try it with the next hire? And kind of see how that goes. So that might be a way to like sneak that influence in there. But yeah, all right. So before we like make any other rabbit trails or anything yet, that's our take on this episode. We're going to line up the next one. Like we talked about the two that's going to come next. The second question from Andy about how you kind of do with your roadmap and things like that. Then I really like Carolyn's topic there about the, how did you say it? The quality of your product is on your support team's face.
Yeah, like how do you define and measure quality, maybe? Because we realized too late that it was whether the support team like wears makeup and dries their hair in the morning or not. Like, what face are you making in the meetings?
Yeah, and Jeff had a good phrase there, the barometer. I like that. That's a good analogy there. So yeah, we'll line those up for the next episodes. Until then, go ahead and hit us up on email. It's hello@supportops.co. We're on Twitter @supportops there. We'll have show notes, shout outs, and everything else that we can think of in the newsletter. You can sign up for it, supportops.co/newsletter. That goes out once a week. Yeah, so that's it. Thanks again for listening. And until we see you again, have an awesome week.